If your morning starts with snap, crackle, pop, and it's not your cereal, call Joint Relief Institute for fast-lasting joint pain relief. And yes, it's covered by Medicare. 708-888-0000.
It's Dave Player on Chicago's very own 720 WGN. Boy, if you love old-time radio, you're just listening all night long. So you get a little Carl Amari, now you get a little Steve Darnell, who discovered the golden age of radio at the age of 12 while listening to Chuck Schaedens' Those Were the Days, a weekly show looking back at the simpler times, the happy days, the golden years of old-time radio and beyond. And he's also the publisher and editor of Nostalgia Digest magazine, now celebrating over 40 years. He talks about radio's golden age at NostalgiaDigest.com and YesterdayUSA.com, among others. And joining me tonight to talk about the winter edition of Nostalgia Digest magazine is my pal, Steve Darnell.
Good morning, David.
How you doing, buddy? Here, let me turn on your mic.
There I am.
There you are. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning. Nice to be here.
On this cold winter's night.
We were saying this when Bruce was doing the news, that there are considerably fewer revelers walking past the studio window than the last time I was here.
You know what's funny is when I go home now, when I pass by like the McDonald's in Ontario and stuff, mm-hmm. look down the side streets, you'll see some of these little nightclubs in the alleys and stuff.
Sure.
That's where all these people are, and these young punks, these young kids, aren't wearing coats.
You see these girls. When you were a young punk, did you wear a coat?
No, my
in
son
this
doesn't either. No.
Well, see, there you go.
No. As the young punk at the studio right now, I can confirm, no jackets.
There's no jackets. Seriously.
Yet he's wearing a hat.
He's wearing a hat.
You and I have no hair, and he's wearing the hat.
No, but I say this with all due respect. There are these young girls with these little strapless, nothing dresses, just about barely covering what's underneath. And they're walking around town like nothing's going on when the wind chill's 20 below. I don't get it.
Am I just old? Walking,
are you
running?
Yeah. No, I don't get it. Like they're all and I see a guy with a jacket while she's got her arms around herself. I'm thinking, give her your jacket, you dork.
Are they going to be on the show?
You goof.
That would be great.
That would be fantastic. It would be fantastic. Well, here, you know, so Nostalgia Digest magazine. Mm-hmm. I think I told you this before. And this is the geek in me, when the little TV guides came out, you know, in the 70s, 80s,
oh, sure.
and 90s, I always look forward to seeing what was going on, what was on and stuff. That's how I feel when I get your magazine. When I see that arrive in the mail, I'm cracking that wafer seal, and I can't wait to sit down and read what's in here.
Well, thank you. I mean, it's a lot of fun. I've been doing this now for a little over 10 years, and I'm amazed at the depth and breadth of topics that people want to know about and people want to write about, you know?
But it stretches everything. It's not just about old-time radio. It gets you back to the movies, the music, and there's always some really cool Chicago stories in here, and I just love savoring this book when I get it.
Well, thank you. Well, like I say, the previous publisher, Chuck Schaedens, who you referred to, Chuck had started this, and I think one of the things he established was that nostalgia could be a very broad umbrella, and you could fit a lot under there. And so, yes, if this were just a publication about old-time radio, I mean, there would be readers, but let's face it, that's not a sizable portion of the U.S. population.
So 30 years from now, are we going to be talking about Full House?
I don't know. I don't know. Somehow I think the boomers are pretty well represented elsewhere.
I think, yeah.
I don't know. People have asked me about that, and you know, is there going to be a time when 20 years from now we're doing cover stories about
Elton? You creep into the 60s and the 70s
a little bit. I mean, yeah, I think my definition of nostalgia for the purpose of this magazine is it's things that used to be one way and now they aren't.
Yeah, I like that. Okay.
That's not always change for the better or for the worse, but you know, there were radio shows, for instance, or television shows that were groundbreaking in their way. Yeah. In some cases, they've been superseded by the imitators that came along.
Sure.
And in some cases,
or inspired by. Yeah.
Well, of course, yes. And you know, it's sort of like, think about Jack Kirby and think about all the artists who borrowed from Jack Kirby, and some of them actually became more famous, you know.
That's true.
And so for us, there are shows that, for whatever reason, aren't being talked about, people who, for whatever reason, are not being talked about, or places that aren't being talked about that should be. I always sort of said, my approach has always been, you know, yeah, there are probably not as many people from the golden age of radio as there used to be, but there's no one left at all from the Civil War, and we still read about that.
That's true. That's absolutely true. That's absolutely true.
You know, when somebody writes an article about truth or consequences or flexible flyer sleds, you know, it's like, yeah, because that's when those things meant something very important at one time, and it's important for us to know what that was.
Well, now Jimmy Durante's on the cover, but the first one I was going to talk to you about is this flexible flyer article, because it's winter perfect. And this year, and I know you've been over, I have this this little alcove in the top of when you walk in the house, there's like an old desk, an old radio up there.
Oh, yes. Beautiful.
We added a sled up there this year for the winter because I went to my folks, and he said, you know, I think your sled is in the top of the garage, like in the rafter somewhere, from 1967. Now, I don't remember the exact brand.
Wow.
But I'm like, are you kidding me? And I remembered in my head what it looked like, and my son and I grabbed it down, and it was just full of, like, soot.
Of course.
And until we got it home and literally washed it down, wiped it down, polished it, it looked like it was brand new. And I thought, this is what sleds were made like years ago. I mean, you know, the backs of them, you could steer them. I mean, they but they were all solid wood. And so you kind of give us, you show an ad in here, which is totally cool. Get Dad to give you a thunderbolting.
a thunderbolting flexible flyer.
Yeah.
Yes.
So before the aluminum saucers and the plastic and stuff, our kids know now this was what really was a sled.
And, you know, it is interesting, and you know, you and I are of similar vintage, and I don't think either of us like to think of ourselves as the cranky old guy who, you know, laments everything of modern times.
I do sometimes.
We're not. Well,
I do sometimes.
Okay. but I am, again, that's the sort of thing, you know, our parents would talk about when things were built to last, and my God, it's true. I mean, I think about, well, like you have, as I do, a vintage radio in your house.
Right. Yep.
I mean, I have a 1941 Zenith floor model. It's been restored, but my God, that thing is solid. It is.
Yeah.
It was clearly built to be a centerpiece for years and years. And the same with the flexible flyer sleds of 60 and 70 years ago.
I listened to my old Zenith. I listened to Hawks games and Cubs games on that thing. And because the sound is so bellowing and it's fabulous, it goes through the whole house.
It's true. And with all due respect, there's not a lot on contemporary AM radio that you'd want to hear through a 1941 radio, just because I keep thinking, you know, this should be saved for Pearl Harbor updates, you know, or for the Day of Infamy speech.
You know, when I finally wake up on Sunday mornings, I listen to Dean. I'll throw it on it, you know, by the time I wake up, because I wake up a little later.
Well,
but
Dean's old school.
He's old school. But this flexible flyer, I was looking at this, it was patented in 1889, and it was around for quite some time, but you could buy a sled for $2.
$2. And, of course, that's when people would make 50 cents a week at their job.
That's
too.
True. So, that's, you know, true. We got to keep that in perspective. Absolutely.
But these are the things, the things I love to talk about, because I love hearing other people's stories, and I love hearing about the things, as you do, the things that interest other people. And, you know, we hear about it at our website and through the magazine and all those things.
You talk about Chicago Southtown Theater, which closed in 1958, and there's a great article in here about Ingrid Bergman. And, you know,
sure.
I always find, I know who she is, but I didn't know in depth who she was. And I was looking that she came to Hollywood, didn't even speak English, which is pretty amazing. I know her from Casablanca and Bells of St. Mary's,
Bells
right?
of St.
Yeah,
Mary's
which I didn't
Crosby.
Which I didn't get to see this year.
Oh no.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my God, with the famous
but a classic.
Right, and the famous birthday song.
That's right.
For the birth of Christ
that's
child.
Right.
Great
yeah,
moment.
That's right.
Well, yeah, and Ingrid Bergman's, I mean, obviously she was a tremendously talented actress, and she did a fair amount of radio, which we will be playing on our shows. But that was kind of an interesting quandary, because one of the things I've the Digest has never really been about was digging the dirt. You know what I mean? I Elvis Costello had the analogy that when he did his interview show, he said, I wasn't interested in dark secrets. I was more interested in light secrets. And I like that idea. But that said, I mean, you can't write about Ingrid Bergman without writing about the fact that she was embroiled in a tremendous controversy that threatened to derail her career at a time when that was really unusual. So, yes, I mean, that's, and I think that's different than saying, oh, well, you know, this guy was secretly a drinker.
Yeah,
you
know? Right. No, that's a good point.
And he's not here to defend himself.
And I remember one of her last roles was actually on WGN-TV. It was like an independent television station miniseries. It was a woman called Golda.
That's right.
It was one of the last things.
With Leonard Nimoy.
What are we going to listen to?
We have actually a clip of Ingrid Bergman's radio work. This is her appearing with Humphrey Bogart. A gentleman I think our listeners may know, in the Screen Guild Players production of Casablanca. This is from a set at NostalgiaDigest.com called Humphrey Bogart on the Air.
And what's really cool is people understand that they used to take these hit films and turn them into a radio broadcast,
yes.
Like an hour long. That's pretty
sometimes
cool.
And sometimes half an hour. And I'm the line of radio writers who have pulled out their hair trying to condense a film like Casablanca into 25 minutes.
Holy cow!
And they do a beautiful job of it. And of course, when you have the original stars, any other omissions are forgiven.
Let's take a listen.
Richard again. We're back in Paris.
Please.
Your unexpected visit isn't connected by any chance with the letters of transit, is it?
Richard, you can ask any price, but you must give me those letters.
I went all through that with your husband. There's no deal.
Richard, we loved each other once. If those days meant anything at all to
you. I wouldn't bring up Paris if I were you. It's poor salesmanship.
Please listen to me. If you knew what really happened...
I wouldn't believe you no matter what you told me. You'll say anything now to get what you want.
Richard, don't you understand? You are our last hope. If you don't help us, Victor Laszlo will die in Casablanca.
Love it. I'm going to die in Casablanca. It's just the spot for it. Now, if you... Well, I see you come prepared for anything. Give me that gun.
No. I tried to reason with you. I tried everything. Now, if you don't give me those letters, I'll shoot.
Go ahead.
Get me those letters.
No, they're right here in my pocket. I don't have to. If you want them, you'll have to kill me to get them. If Laszlo, if the underground means so much, you won't stop at anything. If you don't shoot fast, I'm going to take that gun away from you. Now give it to me.
Oh, Richard. I tried to stay away. I thought I would never see you again, that you were out of my life. If you knew what I went through the day you left Paris... How much I love you. How much I still love you.
That's pretty cool.
Isn't that great?
Yeah, that's pretty cool here. And you can, again, magazine, CDs, all at Nostalgia Digest magazine.
NostalgiaDigest.com, or you can call the office at 773-769-6575.
All right, we're going to talk about the cover story, which is the great Jimmy Durante, and much more with Steve Darnall of Nostalgia Digest magazine. Next on 720 WGN.
It's so important to make someone happy. Make just one someone happy. Make just one heart-to-heart you.
I'm going to say if you're going to make someone happy, you should probably make your wife or your girlfriend happy because it'll make you your life a little easier, don't you think? It's Dave Player.
Happy wife, happy life.
That's right. 720 WGN. We're talking to Steve Darnall of Nostalgia Digest magazine. That was Jimmy Durante, the Schnozzola.
That's great, right. Schnozzola.
Great article in here. Again, I don't know much about Jimmy. I know there was a radio show, there was a television show. I remember him as the voice and the narrator on Rankin and Bass's Frosty the Snowman.
That's right.
But I was looking at some of his history. He got started in his career by starting like a jazz novelty band. Like, that's not something I would have expected to hear.
Yeah, I mean, he grew up in New York City. He was a piano player in Coney Island, he was actually friends with a singing waiter who became famous as Eddie Cantor.
Yeah.
And you know, apparently it was Eddie who suggested Jimmy try performing comedy or you know, getting out there. And the story goes, and Walter Scannell, who wrote the article for the Nostalgia Digest, mentioned that apparently Jimmy's response was, "Gee, Eddie, I couldn't do that. I'm afraid the people would laugh at me. And it's like, yes, and it was just priceless. Yeah. I mean, he was, but yes, he played piano, and that was his big thing originally. And then, of course, he hooked up with his partners, Eddie Jackson and Lou Clayton. And
later, Gary Moore.
Well, later, yes, on radio with Gary Moore.
Yeah, and that which was, as well, which we just talked about with Carol Burnett.
That's right, yeah, yes. I mean, that was a great interview, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
But yes, Gary Moore, one of those people who doesn't get mentioned enough. And Jimmy Durante and Gary Moore actually came together almost by accident. Gary Moore was going to do the Summer Replacement series on radio for Bud Abbott and Lou Costello. But Lou got sick with rheumatic fever.
Right.
And suddenly, rather than just thrust young Gary Moore out there, whom nobody had heard of, figuratively speaking, then let's get somebody else in there. And Jimmy was available. So,
and I didn't know that, by the way, again, until I read the article that he did radio with Jimmy. That's pretty cool. And Jimmy wasn't a really educated guy, but that he made that part of his act and who he was. Yeah.
And just, you know, it's really interesting. And again, you and I grew up after the golden age of radio. And so, you know, to see someone like Jimmy Durante on television in the 1960s or 70s, I mean, this was a 75-year-old guy, you know, and that's a little bit different than hearing him on the radio in the 1940s, for instance, when he's, you know, younger. And he certainly got that vibrancy that people loved about him when he was performing in nightclubs in the 20s and 30s. I mean, you know, to be able to write or sing a song like, I know darn well I can do without Broadway, but can Broadway do without me? I mean, that takes a very particular talent to sell that song without looking like a jerk, and he could do it.
And you brought a clip. What are we going to hear?
This is the dialogue. Mm-hmm. This is Jimmy on an Armed Forces Radio Service Command Performance Program with Ginger Rogers.
All right, let's take a listen.
A crisis has arose, Miss Rogers. I am the recipient of a telegram informing me of the arrival in our city tomorrow of a certain eminent personage, a personage so exalted I hesitate to mention his name.
You don't mean...
Yes, Umbria.
My, that is an exalted personage. But Jimmy, just where does the crisis come in?
His wife says, please get me a date for my first night in Hollywood. Would prefer an Academy Award winner who can dance.
I see. And so you came to me.
Hmm? Naturally, Gary Cooper is too tall.
I'm very flattered.
Oh, tut, tut, my dear Rogers. Your idol, your ideal, the way they spell him here is terrible. You don't know how to spell. I'll start from the beginning. You're ideal for Umbriago. You're so, shall I say, trade decollete?
And that is the great Jimmy Durante. We're going to have more with Steve Darnall when we come back. Nostalgia Digest magazine or nostalgiadigest.com. You can find out everything you need to know about this magazine. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about John Wayne, Captain Kangaroo, and much more next on 720 WGN. There it is. It's Dave Player on 720 WGN. We're talking to Steve Darnall, Nostalgia Digest magazine, nostalgiadigest.com, talking about the winter edition, which features a little story in here about Captain Kangaroo.
Indeed. Well, as we've said, we've been very fortunate to work with a lot of interesting writers who have a lot of different interests.
Yes.
And so, we were talking about this during the break. It's sort of like, you know, my gosh, when we realize we have Jimmy Durante, Ingrid Bergman, Flexible Flyer Sleds, and Captain Kangaroo in the same issue.
Yeah, it's awesome.
If I wasn't publishing this, I'd be thrilled. I'd be really interested.
He was Clarabelle, by the way, on Howdy Doody, which I did not know that. And then he became the captain we all know. See, it's funny. For kids, I think, across America who had a great local show, Captain Kangaroo might not have ranked high on the list. We had Bozo, we had Ray Rainer,
of course.
We had Bill Jackson, we had Frazier Thomas. I don't know that I watched a lot of Captain Kangaroo.
Oh,
but
I did.
Did you?
Oh, my God. When you start playing the theme, I'm like, because he jingled the keys before, right before the theme started.
Sure.
And I was waiting for the keys to jingle. But, yeah, I loved watching that show.
I assumed that's why we have this enormous net filled with ping pong balls right overhead. Oh, I shouldn't have said that, should I?
Yes,
no.
Yes. The magic of WGNradio.com.
I put that there, Steve. You ruined the surprise. I worked all day on that.
Just for you.
But you're right. I mean, and we talked about, you know, nostalgia being a look back at things that aren't the way they are now. And that's certainly, I mean, my goodness, the idea that you would give an hour of network television in the morning every day for a children's show it seems inconceivable. And then to give one that was as sedate.
It was very low-key, and that was his intention, though.
Oh, yeah.
Because of all the stimulants that were out there, he wanted to just talk to the kids.
Yes, and of course, it was beautiful, and I know people who grew up watching him and you know, it was sort of like, yes, that was a very one-on-one intimate experience.
Roger?
Would that show would not hold up today for the audience, for the young children? It, again,
I think
it
would be
moved
tough.
Very slowly.
Yeah.
I mean, it had its Mr. Moose and it had Mr. Green Jeans and some of that stuff. There were no cartoons.
There were a few. There was Tom Terrific, and
was he doing those?
Right.
Okay,
Tom Terrific. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's right.
Oh my gosh, you know, and
but it was very, very, like you said, sedate. It was very laid back and relaxed and friendly.
Mm-hmm.
And you just, my gosh, they've even moved Sesame Street off of regular TV.
You know what?
Now.
My I watched the premiere episode this morning with my son on HBO. It was a little different, tone. It felt updated.
More violent, wasn't it?
And it was not more
violent. That takes place in New York. No,
on HBO. That is so funny. We have a little bit of a clip here of Bob Keeshan talking about how he got the role and how he got the show, Captain Kangaroo. Let's take a little listen.
So they approached me through my agent at the time and said, would he be interested in doing a pilot for us? And so I said I would, but then there are legal entanglements. But we figured we could do the pilot anyway without getting in any legal trouble. And we did. We put together a pilot on a program that we called Captain Kangaroo. And it had Gus Allegretti, who did Bunny Rabbit, and eventually did Mr. Moose. He wasn't in the original. And they finally chose our show. Frank Stanton, then the president of CBS, very much liked our program. And so he said, I think that this is the program we should choose. It represents CBS very well. It's a good, gentle program. And I think we'd be proud to have it.
John Wayne, there's an article about John Wayne in here, and this is really cool because this is a word for word almost. It's a Warner Brothers original biography of him from 1950.
Yes, we have a handful of these in our archives, and I'm always interested in those things because just as, you know, we're not interested in necessarily plumbing the depths of deep, dark secrets, it's also interesting to see what the studios would do to hype their stars and talk about their personal lives. And
highly interested in national affairs, Wayne is now serving his second term of the president of the Motion Picture Alliance. His four children live
with
his first wife,
yes.
But he sees them very often. Please, he's a great father.
Well, these things are interesting because unlike the most of the articles we publish in the Digest, which are written in the 21st century, these are things that, you know, in a way they're sort of frozen in amber. You know, it's sort of like, I mean, in 1950, no one knew what was still to come. You know, the Quiet Man and the Searchers and the Man Who Shot Liberty Valance and True Grit. I mean, this guy still had another quarter century of some amazing films in him. That would, and you know, and in a way, to see something like that, where they just type up this little bio and send it around to newspapers, which is what they did 60 years ago, it's sort of like, it almost underplays the fact that this guy went on to become an absolute legend, you know. And yes, to try to make him just sound regular and normal, it's sort of like, can you imagine them doing that today?
No. And he had time for radio, too. What are we going to hear?
He didn't do a lot of radio, but he did a little bit. And this is an excerpt from a Screen Directors Playhouse program from 1949. It's John Wayne and Ward Bond stepping into the role that Henry Fonda played in the film Fort Apache.
Interesting. All right, let's take a listen.
Captain York, you got back. Well?
Cochise has crossed the river, Colonel. He's coming in with all these people. He wants to talk peace.
He's back on American soil?
Yes, sir.
Good. Captain, the regiment moves out at dawn.
The regiment? But I promised Cochise we'd meet him alone, unarmed. You and me and Meacham.
Why Meacham?
He insists Meacham be present.
Oh, very well. You will prepare your troops to march at dawn.
But Cochise will think I've tricked him.
Exactly. We have tricked him. We've tricked him into returning to American soil, and I intend to see that he stays here.
Colonel, I gave Cochise my word.
Your word to a breech-clouted savage? To an illiterate, uncivilized murderer and treaty breaker? There is no question of honor, sir, between an American officer and Cochise.
There is to me, Colonel. You can't send out the regiment.
Captain York, so long as you are in my command, you will obey my orders. The regiment will march at dawn.
All right, so a little John Wayne there.
Indeed, yeah. John Wayne didn't do a lot of radio, but boy, you just listen to that voice. He was perfect.
Classic.
For radio. And you knew who it was instantly.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Now, and, I don't know. I'm sorry, guys, but the Ward Bond, when you bring him up, the two of them were like best friends. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if this is in the article, but they were best friends, mainly because they shared the same political views.
Yeah, that's not in the article, but you're absolutely right. And in fact, that, you know, we do this internet show, Radio's Golden Age, every Sunday, and we're going to be featuring that particular production on the show next Sunday, January the 24th, at yesterdayusa.com and talkzone.com and 1640radio.com. And then, like a lot of radio's Golden Age shows, hopefully it'll make its way to our YouTube channel, the Nostalgia Digest channel.
Very cool. Just a little John Wayne tidbit we're going to have next week. Jeff Sulzing, who is Johnny Carson's nephew, and he's one of the Tonight Show producers of when Johnny was on, and he's also the president of Carson Entertainment, and looking through some clips as we're preparing the show, because we're going to play a lot of Johnny clips, and there was a clip of Don Rickles hosting the show, and you know, they used to do a lot of these. I don't know if you guys remember this, but all of a sudden someone would just come out of the curtain. Bob Hope would come out. It would be like this big surprise appearance.
Sure.
And John Wayne walked out, and the crowd went crazy. Actually, you know what? Bob Hope walked out first. Crowd went crazy. Bing Crosby came out. Crowd went crazy. I don't even know why the three of them were together. And then the curtain opened up, and here comes John Wayne. They were wild because, I mean, how big this guy was.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
He was huge. And I remember Rickles sitting down and talking to John Wayne and doing some imitations of him, and he said a few things to Bob Hope, and then he looked down to Bing Crosby, and he says, "Bing, this is television." He's like, "Oh, this is a Kraft Music Hall. I see.
Oh, my gosh. No, Wayne was, I mean, an iconic figure. And you're right. I mean, regardless of whether you agreed with him politically, you know, he was a tremendous presence on the screen.
Absolutely.
And, you know.
Absolutely. We've got that Captain Kangaroo clip where Bob Keeshan, I wanted to play this, is talking about how he got the show. Let's take a listen. No, we don't. He's going to put that back in for the podcast.
I think he's watching
Check that
Shadows
out.
On the Wall.
We'll do that at WGNradio.com. You'll catch that later. So February is always Waukegan's very own. It's Jack Benny's month. His birthday, Valentine's Day, 1894. He was born, and this blows my mind because I still love watching the old Jack Benny shows, and I love listening to Jack Benny when he's on your show as well, and when Carl does it as well. And I will tell you, 122 years ago he was born. 122 years.
I know. That's well. We live in an amazing era where the work of a century ago can be preserved. But yes, this is the 38th, I believe, the 38th Jack Benny month. In the history of our Those Were the Days show.
Chuck Shaden started.
Yeah, which Chuck started. Yeah. Next year, of course, 39, and I think all the rest will be 39. But, yeah, we're very excited because this year we've got sort of a recurring motif of involving Jack Benny programs that deal with him making movies or else parodying movies. One of the films he parodies is Gaslight.
Hmm.
So we're going to hear, and in addition, we're going to hear Ingrid Bergman on the Lux Radio Theater production of Gaslight. So you'll hear her doing the straight version and then doing the comedic version with Jack Benny on the February 6th edition of Those Were the Days.
But just listening to Jack Benny, those are one of the shows that are pretty timeless, I think, to listen to. And it's in some comedies, some radio comedies aren't. They're a little tough because they're really indicative of the era. Jack Benny is really one of those shows that you can listen to for the next century. I mean, it's just that great.
Yeah, well, it's Jack Benny comedy was character driven. Yeah, I mean, people like Hope and Bob Hope, Fred Allen, they did topical humor, which, you know, is only good if you remember who Henry Wallace or Fiorella LaGuardia are. And even then, it may not age well. But no, Benny's was all about this character of Jack Benny and how the world responded to that character. And in a sense, yes, it was absolutely brilliant because it was going to be timeless as a result.
And my kids listened to it as well. And I remember we were up at the, I think it was the Genesee Theater in Waukegan for a show. And we walked outside and Emma, who was much younger, she was maybe 7 years old, pointed across the street and said, because there's a Jack Benny statue
that's right
there. And she goes, "Dad, look, it's Jack Benny." And people were like, "What?" Because that is a little bit far removed, you know, from another era. But
that's
true
for a 6 year or 7 year old to be able to know that in 2013. That's that's kind of a challenge. Well, I'm thrilled. You know, one of the things that we're all trying to do is
pass this on to the next
spread
generation.
The word. Right. I mean, Absolutely. We're trying to preserve this in word and sound. That's what the Digest is about. That's what our radio shows are about.
So Nostalgia Digest magazine, very affordable, and you can get it at nostalgiadigest.com along with a ton of great CD collections as well. And how else can people get a hold of it?
They can call the offices, 773-769-6575. NostalgiaDigest.com, also in addition to the magazine. We also have the podcast, which you were kind enough to participate in some time ago.
Yeah.
And as you said, old-time radio shows on CD. There's a lot there for people who love these sounds or for people who would like to know more about these performers.
Steve Darnall, thanks a lot, buddy.
Thank you, David.